Reading from 1 Kings, the story of Naboth's vineyard. 1 Kings 21 from verse 1. Sometime later, there was an incident involving a vineyard belonging to Naboth, the Jezreelite. The vineyard was in Jezreel, close to the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. Ahab said to Naboth, "Let me have your vineyard to use a vegetable garden since it is so close to my palace. In exchange, I will give you a better vineyard, or if you prefer, I will pay you what it's worth." But Naboth replied, "The Lord forbid that I should give you the inheritance of my ancestors." So Ahab went home, sullen and angry, because Naboth the Jezreelite had said, "I will not give you the inheritance of my ancestors." He lay on his bed, sulking, and refused to eat. His wife Jezebel came in and asked him, "Why are you so sullen? Why won't you eat?" He answered her, "Because I said to Naboth the Jezreelite, 'Sell me your vineyard, and if you prefer, I will give you another vineyard in its place.' But he said, 'I will not give you my vineyard.'" Jezebel, his wife, said, "Is this how you act as king over Israel? Get up and eat. Cheer up. I will get you the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite." So she wrote letters in Ahab's name, placed a seal on them, and sent them to the elders and nobles who lived in Naboth's city with him. In those letters she wrote, "Proclaim a day of fasting and give Naboth a prominent seat among the people. Put two scoundrels opposite him and get them to bring charges that he has cursed both God and the king. Then take him out and stone him to death." So the elders and the nobles who lived in Naboth's city did as Jezreel directed. They proclaimed a fast and seated Naboth in a prominent place among the peoples. Then two scoundrels came and sat opposite him and brought charges against Naboth before the people, saying, "Naboth has cursed both God and king." So they took him outside the city and stoned him to death. Then they sent word to Jezebel, "Naboth has been stoned to death." As soon as Jezebel heard that Naboth had been stoned to death, she said to Ahab, "Get up. Take possession of the vineyard of Naboth, the Jezreelite, that he refused to sell you. He is no longer alive, but dead." When Ahab heard that Naboth was dead, he got up, went down to take possession of Naboth's vineyard.
The second reading comes from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 17, at verse 1. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. Just then there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah."
Good morning, friends. Good to see you this morning. These two stories go together, the two readings we've just had, in a complex way, and they help us answer one of the perplexing questions of life, which is, why do the wicked sometimes prosper, and why do bad things happen to good people? But I need to tell you a bit of the longer story, and I'm not going to give you answers. I'm just going to tell you bits of the story and trust that the Word of God will be active in your minds. So these two stories fit into the longer picture, which has to do when the northern part of Israel separates from the southern part, and the kings of the north make up their own religion. They actually create two little idols, two little golden calves, reminiscent of the calf that Aaron had made way back in the desert, but they make these two little calves, and they say, you no longer need to go back to Jerusalem to worship, because now we have our own gods. And they named certain people priests. They anointed them. They set aside holy days. They made up their own religion, and they made it a fairly easy religion. Now, one of the worst of these kings of the north was named Ahab. He compounded his sin by marrying an evil woman named Jezebel. Even the name. We don't name our little girls Jezebel, do we? Right? She was the epitome of evil. She was the master of palace intrigue. She was a backstabber, a conniving woman, as you saw in the story of Naboth, where she arranged for his death so that her husband could get out of his depression and have a vegetable garden. So here you have Ahab and Jezebel. These are the people of God. I mean, these are the chosen ones, right? And they're worshiping a calf. So God does not leave them without a witness. But God sends a man named Elijah to the palace there in Samaria, the northern part of Israel. Elijah knocks on the door and he says, King, just to get your attention, it's not going to rain until I tell you. See you later. He leaves. A year passes, 2 years pass, no rain. 3 years pass, no rain. The people are hungry. People are starving to death. He comes back to the palace, knocks on the palace again. Ahab answers, oh, it's you. He says, yes. And here is what you need to do if you want it to rain. You need to gather all the people of Israel together on Mount Carmel. And I would like you to bring these false prophets, because when Jezebel had come to Israel, not only did they have the little golden calf, but she had brought the gods from her home, particularly an evil god, a devil god named Baal. So Elijah said to Ahab, I want you to bring the 450 prophets of Baal to Mount Carmel. So Ahab, because he wants rain, calls all of Israel together on Mount Carmel on a particular day. They all show up. Here are the 450 prophets of Baal. And Elijah speaks to everyone. And he says, how long are you going to vacillate between worship of the one true God and this fake evil god named Baal? And no one answered him. They were silent. He said, okay, then here's what we're going to do. We're going to have a contest to decide which of these two gods is the real God. And everybody's like, yeah. He said, we're going to have a cook-off. Kind of extreme kitchen. He said, we're going to give to the prophets of Baal a bull. And I will get a bull, and they will get firewood, and I will get firewood, but neither of us will receive a match to light the fire. But this will be a test. We will both ask our God to send fire from heaven, and the God that sends fire is the one true God. And all the people were like, yes, partly because they thought they would get steaks out of the deal. So he says to the prophets, you go first. So the 450 prophets of Baal arrange the firewood. They cut up their bull. They put the meat out there. And then they start to implore the god Baal to send fire from the sky. They're like, does anybody know a fire dance? And okay, let's do this. So they start dancing around. And I'm making up this part. I don't know what they said. And they're praying to God and they're dancing. And Elijah starts ridiculing them, because there is no fire from the sky. And he says, oh, you know what your problem is? This is Baal's day off. Tough break for you. And then he says, oh, I know what it is. Maybe he's deaf. You need to speak a little louder. You need to yell more. Well, this just infuriates the priest. And so they get out their knives and they cut themselves. This was part of their ritual. So they're bleeding and they're dancing. 450 men dancing around in land that has not seen rain for 3 years. I mean, this is a dust cloud. It's blood on the ground. Finally, they get tired by mid-afternoon. They say, nah, well, let's see you, wise guy. Because they don't believe. Elijah looks around. He finds a big stone. He brings it over and he says, Reuben. Finds another stone, brings it over, sets it next to it, says, Simeon. Another stone, Levi. Another stone, Judah. 12 stones, the last one he names Benjamin. And they know what he's talking about. The 12 tribes unified. Then he arranges the firewood. Then he kills his bull, puts the meat up there. Now, this is a lot of meat, right? I mean, a whole animal. This is a lot of meat. So it's a substantial pile that he has here. He asks for a shovel. He digs a trench around the outside, and they're wondering what the trench is for until he asks for water. They bring him 4 jugs of water, and he pours the water on the pile. He wants to remove any suspicion that this has been rigged or somehow he's tricking them. He asks for the water to be filled again. He pours it on. He asks for it again. He pours 12 whole jugs of water on this pile of raw meat and wood. So now the thing's soaked. The trench is filled with water. And then he says, come nearer, my children. So they come in. Nearer still, he says. So now they're all crowded in around this pile of bloody meat and wood soaked in water. He looks up to the sky and he says, oh God, God of our fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, show yourself today to these people. Show yourself today so that you may turn their hearts back to you, so that you may turn their hearts back to. Out of the sky comes a fire. Maybe like lightning, I don't know, but a column of fire so intense that the wood, so intense that the meat is not just cooked medium rare or well done, it is incinerated. I mean, they're just ashes floating now. So intense the fire that the wood is consumed. So intense the fire that the stones themselves are consumed. They're just gone. The water in the little trench is lapped up. Well, the people who have been standing around who have just seen this right in front of them fall to their faces. With their faces to the ground, and they chant as one person, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. They look over now at the 450 prophets of Baal who are suddenly quite uncomfortable. And Elijah says, you know what? They were leading you to death, and they must die. But he does not kill the king. He says to the king, you should get back home because it looks like rain. Well, there's not a cloud in the sky. So the king starts back home in his chariot. Elijah takes his servant, goes up even higher on Mount Carmel. Now, you know where it is. It's right there on the edge of the Mediterranean. See, you can see out over the Mediterranean. So he says to his servant, go look out over the sea and see if there are any clouds. Servant comes back, says, no, there's not a cloud. So Elijah prays. Now go look. The servant goes and looks. Comes back. No, boss. No clouds. Prays again. Now go look. Comes back. No. Third time. Fourth time. Fifth time. Sixth time. He prays 7 times. Now go look. The servant goes and looks. And he comes back and he says, wait a minute. Well, that's funny. Comes back and he says, you know what? I don't know if this means anything or not, boss, but there is a small cloud. About the size of the palm of a man's hand. Elijah gets up, dusts himself off, and says, that's big enough. The Spirit of God comes on him. He grabs his robe. You know, they wouldn't have worn trousers in those days. He grabs his robe. He lifts it up. He chucks it into his belt, and he takes off running. Now the cloud has turned into a thunderhead behind him. Now it's filling the sky. Now raindrops begin to fall. As he runs, he's running back to the palace. He passes the king. He gets there ahead of him, and he thinks it's all been settled. I mean, they've had the contest. Yahweh won. The true God has won. He thinks it's over, but it's not over, because guess who is waiting for Ahab at the entrance to the palace? She has not been to the mountain. And Jezebel is there tapping her foot. Mm-hmm. Where have you been? Well, honey, funny thing happened today. You remember those 450 prophets you used to have? Well, she's furious. Her 450 prophets are dead. So far from being convinced, she is just further entrenched in her idolatry, and she asks for the royal stationery. She writes a letter. She says, "Dear Elijah, today there are 450 prophets who are dead. By this time tomorrow, there will be 451 dead prophets. Sincerely, Jezebel." XOXOXO sends it off. Well, Elijah is terrified by this. I don't have time to tell you that whole story, but he runs away. Let me fast forward 6 years forward now. King Ahab is still king, but he's in trouble. There is a war with Syria, and they are the battle is pitched. Ahab goes out there. He's in his chariot, and one of the Syrian archers takes an arrow, fits it to his bow, and just shoots it up in the air, kind of a random shot. But in these strange coincidences of life, that arrow goes up in the air and it comes down. Now, King Ahab was wearing armor, but it would have been leather, thick leather, but the leather would have had joints in it where it was sewn together. And that arrow, which was launched without any purpose or direction, coincidentally struck King Ahab right in the joint of his leather armor, penetrated the only place it could have penetrated, right into his chest. And he says, "I've been hit." The charioteer turns the chariot around. They go to the rear of the battle line. King Ahab wants to watch how the battle unfolds, but as the day wanes, he sinks lower and lower in the chariot as his blood is on the floor of the chariot, and he dies. The charioteer takes him back to Samaria, back to the capital. They bury him. One of his sons becomes king. He doesn't last long. Another son succeeds him, a king named Joram. But Joram is evil, just like his brother, just like his father, just like his mother. So God raises up a man named Jehu, and Jehu comes after the whole clan of them. He meets Joram just beside a vineyard, and he shoots Joram in the back. Joram dies there. Jehu says to his men, "Throw the body over there in that vineyard." And they do. They toss the body of the king there in the vineyard. Yeah, it's that vineyard. The same one Mommy Dearest had gotten for her husband at the cost of Naboth's life. And now their son's body is thrown into it. It's a long story, isn't it? And now Jehu comes after Mommy. Jezebel knows he's coming. Jezebel sits in the window. Second story. She sits in the window and she puts on her makeup. She wants to look good in death. It does. She puts on her makeup. She brushes her hair. Use your imagination. So she's leaning there on the window, and here comes Jehu riding up to the palace gate with his troops. She calls out to him, "Have you come after me, Zimri?" And they both know Zimri it's an old story, but basically saying, "So you're coming to kill me as queen." He does not even respond to her. He simply calls out to the castle, "Are any of you in there with me?" There's a flurry inside the castle. And a couple of her servants grab her and toss her out the window. She hits the ground below. But you know, a fall from two stories will not easily kill you. So Jehu and the troops ride their horses in, and they make sure that they trample her to death. They go in and they eat dinner, have a good dinner. And then Jehu says, you know what, lads, she was, after all, the daughter of a king, and she was the queen. I want you to give her a proper burial. Go out and bury her. You, and you. Go and bury her. They come back in a minute, and they say, he says, what are you doing here? I told you to bury her. Well, boss, there wasn't enough of her to bury. The dogs got to her. All we found was her skull and hands. So they weren't able to bury her. She had no burial. There was never a place where people could go and say, oh, look, that's the grave of Jezebel. Her memory place was gone. Interesting, isn't it, that Elijah didn't get buried either. Remember? Elijah's walking along the road with his sidekick Elisha, and something opens up in the sky, kind of like maybe a wormhole, something in the time-space continuum, and the sky opens up, and this chariot comes out. Now, they didn't have the words, I think, to properly describe it, but this is the way they described it. They said it was a chariot on fire, drawn by horses on fire. And that chariot and horses drawn by these fiery horses comes down to where Elijah's walking along this dusty road, and he simply, still alive, he simply steps off earth and steps onto the chariot, and he's taken away into the eternal presence of God, never died, never buried. But very different from the final resting place of Jezebel. And if you pay close attention to the story, you'll see how it fits into our second Bible reading, where on a hilltop, not far from where that happened, Elijah appears again, alive and well, along with Moses, along with the one who created everything that exists, and the one who will make right everything that has gone amiss. They're standing there with Jesus at that moment of transfiguration, where they get a little glimpse into the longer story that makes sense out of it all. Amen.